We're kind of like, sadly, but also thankfully for not getting sick, missing our nieces and nephews for the holiday season this year. Because my in-laws are going down there to North Carolina to them, and we can't afford, like, not afford, we can't afford the time to do it. Like, it's...
Right.
So they were supposed to come up here both for Thanksgiving and Christmas, and they wound up coming up for neither. So I don't know when I'll next see my nieces and nephews, but, or nieces and nephew. It's just one nephew, but I was excited for this one because he's getting his first video game. Like, it's...
Oh, there you go. Common ground.
Yeah. They got him a Switch for Christmas, and I got to get him a game, which we got him Pokemon, and
that fits.
We put a whole bunch of, got him the Let's Go Pikachu, because it's, you know, Gen 1. Let him play the first game, just updated, you know? And I was looking forward to it, like, talking to him about video games, because last time he was up here, his mom asked me, like, oh, hey, can you, like, see what kind of video games he likes? And I sat him down, and I put him in a few different things, and he just kind of entered a trance when he started playing Forza Horizon. Just taking a car off. He wasn't even racing or driving. He was just running through trees and, you know, getting like the wreckage score built up.
Yeah.
But he was just having a good old time just plowing stuff over in the middle of nowhere in that game.
That's a good game. That's a game. Like, even I took my Xbox over to my parents' house one time, and it might have actually been for like Christmas a couple years ago. I know it was one of the Forzas, Horizons. But because, like, no, like, you can just drive around and do whatever the fuck you want, so it doesn't really matter. And you're getting points for whatever you do, like, you know, damage, so it doesn't matter. So I was just passing the controller to, like, my aunts and uncles that haven't touched a video game almost ever. And, like, my grandma, I'm like, here, hit the gas. And just to see what they do, and they all just, you know, thought it looked fantastic. My grandma's giggling because all she can do is donuts. She can't drive the damn car. But yeah, stuff like that's fun. Hello and welcome to another episode of Brian Guy and His Super Friends. I'm your host, Brian Labick. Joining me for this episode is Josh Zorich.
Mr. Movie Slut, back in the chair.
And Mike Bradley.
It's been long enough, I forgot about the movie slut thing. I feel like that hasn't been said in a while.
You know, I've been listening. I've had a lot of driving to do lately. And so, weirdly, one of the things I do sometimes is put on some of our old episodes, like our list episodes or things, just
like
to pass
hearing
the time.
Your voice that much.
I like reminiscing back on like the ideas that everybody comes up with about things that I totally forgot that we ever talked about, you know, in the last couple of years. And
quite honestly, that's one of the like funnest things I think about the podcast is just basically using it as like a time capsule. Like, what did 5 years ago
much.
Brian think about this one thing?
Yeah, very much. These guys will attest, I sent the group a message just, I think, yesterday about a best of list that Andy provided that we were promised to get a revised version of in the future that we haven't gotten yet. So
yeah,
like things
Andy
like that happen.
That never usually mixes very well.
But while I was doing that, I kind of remembered the Mr. Movie Slut moniker, and I'm like, well, this might be one of our last of the year, so I'll set a good stage at the end of 23 to just make sure, you know what, in 24 we're gonna own this, and absent of any other go-to intro, we're gonna take it back. We're bringing it back.
That's right.
Nice.
It's fun type of inside jokes for the people that have listened for that long. I don't remember how long we came up with that name or when that name came from.
He did it to himself because I don't feel like any of us would have
that
been
sounds
like, oh,
right.
He's the movie star.
Yeah, I feel like that sounds right.
Sounds like a me thing.
All right, so, you know, we're back. I'm back. It's been a long extended break. I might go for Josh, too. I think you've been a while since you've been on, too.
Yeah, I think I looked. It was maybe since September.
I think the last episode before the Godzilla one we just put up from Mike and Ian, I think it was like October. I think it's the last time we did something. Truth be told, I think this specific episode, we've been trying to record this for weeks. I originally tried to get it recorded before Thanksgiving. We had some scheduling conflicts. Holiday happened. I got COVID. It's been like 4 weeks later. I'm still kind of trying to get over it. There's some residual coughs and stuff, so I apologize in advance if I cough a lot during this episode. But, you know, we're back at it. And, you know, don't worry. We haven't missed anything. There's nothing else worth talking about in geeky pop culture right now. Everything's fine. So you know, we're not missing anything. You're not missing anything.
To be fair, I had to push for the Godzilla minus one because we were gonna miss that, and I was like, nah, this is we can't miss that. So, you know, I wasn't missing a Godzilla opportunity. Not like can't let that go by.
Just a little bit of I guess like housekeeping stuff. We realize we're getting closer to 300. I've talked about it before. I still have no idea what we're really going to do for that. So we've been tossing around ideas. One of the ideas we were talking about was sort of framing it around to look back at the last 7 or 8 years of the podcast. I figured for any listeners out there, maybe we ask for some listener participation. If you've listened to the show over the last 8 years or, you know, even the last 8 episodes, give us some feedback on the show. Let us know if there's any memorable moments or topics that you've liked, even if there's something specific maybe you'd want us to talk about that you want to listen to us talk about. Give us some questions, some feedback, topics. We'll see if we can work them into an episode somehow. Truth be told, if we don't get any responses, then, you know, the whole dynamic for 300 might change. But if we get some feedback, you know, maybe we'll roll with it and see what we can come make of the episode and maybe give it a shot. For right now, we're, like I said, got nothing, toss around some stuff. It'll be here before we know it, so we'll have to come up with something sooner or later. Other than that, we are here to talk about the Marvels. And yes, I realize we never talked about season 2 of Loki, covered Secret Invasion. I don't think we ever gave Ant-Man a proper review. So our MCU coverage has been slipping for sure. The actor and writer strike kind of put a pause on things too. I think the last time we really did one of these, we were kind of still in the thick of the writer strike and all that stuff. I think by the time we recorded Ahsoka, I think the writer strike was over, but the actor strike was still going on. As I said, we haven't, you know, missed a beat, nothing important's been neglected, so we're just going to keep on rolling with what we got. So while some of you may be disappointed we're not here to talk about Loki, I think one of the reasons I was leaning towards talking about the Marvels as opposed to Loki, I think the buzz around Loki seems to be pretty positive. I feel like the internet and most people that I've talked to have enjoyed the second season, how it ended, how it kind of wrapped up. The Marvels, on the other hand, has been struggling. It definitely didn't do well at the box office, at least by Marvel standards. I think there's a good section of people that were really shitting on this movie for whatever reason. And, you know, we'll get to what we think, but honestly, I kind of felt like this movie needed a little bit more attention than Loki. So, you know, if our small little corner of the podcast network can kind of shine some light on this movie, at least maybe help people give it a chance, I think that's good. Is it a perfect film? No. Does it deserve all the crap it's getting online? Definitely not. Do I think Bob Iger is correct in saying that this movie struggled because it was filmed during COVID and didn't have enough executives on set? No, I think Bob is full of shit with that answer. But let's get into this a little bit. I've got an article from Forbes that sums up some of the bullet points from the Marvels as far as like some of the records and stuff that it hit. Good or bad, really.
I was going to say, it says, numbers it hit. It didn't set any records, did it?
Right. Well, okay. Not most of them were not good. So the Marvels grossed, right now this number is outdated. It says 197 million. Currently it's at 205 million worldwide. So that makes it the lowest grossing installment in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, taking the title from The Incredible Hulk, which only grossed 264 million in 2008.
Wow.
It had a $80 million domestic opening, which, again, is the only MCU film to fail to cross the 100 million mark, falling more than 50 million behind the 134 million grossed by The Incredible Hulk.
Wait, time out there. So that's implying that The Incredible Hulk even opened over 100 million? If I heard that correctly?
Yes. Yes. 134 million gross. Well, sorry. This might not be opening. I think this is just domestic gross.
Okay.
Yeah, so total domestic for The Incredible Hulk was 134 million. Currently, the Marvels is at 984. So it made a little bit more than what the Forbes article has. but still not great.
Yeah, we're
is listed at 46 million for the opening.
Yeah, that was the next bullet point. Recorded the worst ever opening weekend for an MCU film. 47 million, once again, falling behind The Incredible Hulk, which opened to 55 million in its opening weekend. Which they're saying for inflation would have been about 71 million today.
I just wanted to point out, we're recording this on December 21st, so that people have a timestamp. Yes. Yeah. And that's what, about six to seven weeks after it opened on November the 10th, I think.
So it's basically not playing anywhere domestically that I have seen. So it still might be in maybe some overseas theaters somewhere, or maybe discount theaters still racking a little bit of money, but definitely not much more to make a dent. It set the record for the biggest drop in an MCU film's second weekend, when ticket sales fell 78%. The film's box office struggles are magnified compared to its reported $220 million budget, making it the only MCU film to fail to outgross its production costs. So this movie never hit the black for costs and box office. It's saying the worst cinema score rating based on polls for an MCU film with a B, which cinema score rating of a B is not bad, but I guess it's the worst by an MCU film. So I didn't realize all the other ones were that high, were B or higher, I guess. It says it has the current third lowest score for an MCU film on Rotten Tomatoes with 62%. Looking at Rotten Tomatoes now, it looks like it's at 61%, but that's the critics' review. Audience score for this movie is at 83%, which, again, the way we talked about these movies before, it's like the audience rating always seems like it's higher for the most part, I feel like, than the critics. So this number right here, 61 for critic and 83 for audience, I think kind of points brings to light the point that I kind of want to make over the course of this episode, which is, if anything, this movie is fun. I think it's worth seeing. I don't think it's worth the hate. I definitely think there's more there than people are giving it credit for, but I don't know. Some of this stuff. The one good thing I think that the Forbes article does mention is that it's the first MCU installment to be directed by a black woman, Nia DaCosta. Fourth MCU film to be directed by a woman. The Marvels is also the highest grossing film directed by a black woman, surpassing Avril DuVernay's A Wrinkle in Time, which grossed $132 million worldwide. One of the few female-led installments in the MCU. Captain Marvel was $1 billion, but that was a while ago. Black Widow, Eternals, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever have also featured women as top billed actors. Everything else is just kind of like MCU stuff, not necessarily stuff that the Marvels has done. But that's kind of where we're at, I guess, with this, which, again, I think looks bad, and I don't know, kind of goes back to, I think, what we've kind of bring up every time we talk about a superhero movie. But are we hitting the fatigue phase? Are there too many other factors at play that maybe lead to this? Like the most recently with the strikes contributing to this? Because again, when this movie came out, the strikes were in full force. No one could promote this thing, which was something that was happening with the actors. They still had movies coming out, but no one could do the talk show rounds and the interviews to try to help promote it and sell it. Whether or not that would have helped, who knows? You know, Marvel over the years, and they've gone on record saying this, they've gone for quantity over quality, and they were just putting out a bunch of stuff and starting to see a, you know, diminishing return on their investments because there was just too much out there and people just stopped going to see stuff. Now, is that a knock on the quality of the stuff? Is it a knock on there's just too much out there? Are people getting tired of it? It's hard to pick one specific thing. But I don't know, Josh, what do you think? You think this is something we should be worried about? Should the MCU be worried? Are we hitting that superhero fatigue? Because, I mean, The Flash kind of had the same issue. I think we talked about this when we talked about The Flash, too.
Yes and no. I mean, first and foremost, it sounds like Bob Iger hit the nail on the head. You need more people in suits who don't know shit about storytelling or movie industries.
Judgy.
That's got to be the at least the primary contributing factor, right? No,
more
I agree
cooks
with
in
you.
The
That's...
kitchen always helps.
Oh, always, yeah. So let's set that aside. I mean, I think this year in particular shows a few things, but it's a combination of a lot. It really is. In the same way that the Flash was that you mentioned, it was a different combination of a different lot of things. Yes, there's probably fatigue. The fact that two of your three main titular leads of this movie were introduced in streaming service products that
good point. Yeah.
Not everybody sees. There's a lot. I think. Yeah. I think the company and fans like us take it for granted that if you like Marvel, of course you would just go. And if you're at least aware enough to know what is the MCU proper, you know, aside from things like The Runaways and The New Mutants, like if you know what the MCU is, we take for granted everybody's watching everything. So if you didn't see Ms. Marvel,
pulling this out of my ass. But I feel like the Ms. Marvel show was maybe one of the highest rated but least watched streaming MCU shows, which is
sad. I believe I heard that as well. Throw that in the pot. I do think the promotional aspect of it suffered tremendously. The writer's strike had nothing to do with this because the movie was already in the can for a long time. But the actor strike and the promotional limitations, 1,000%. That can't be discounted. Over and above that, look at November. It was a busy month with holidays, but you also had a ton of huge movies coming out, like week after week, like IP-driven things. People have adjusted 2.5 years post-COVID to the storytelling beats that Marvel has or has not accomplished. And while I'm in the bag for all of this, just because I enjoy it enough, like piece by piece, this many entries on since Black Widow, we've had like 15 different projects, maybe between movies and Disney Plus series that fit into phase 4 and 5. Like, it's been dense. And I still, after that many, I still don't know what kind of overarching story they may or may not be building to. And I haven't been that critical of that aspect of it until now. Because this year, you had Ant-Man, which tried to finally move forward with Kang, picking up from Loki almost 2 years previously.
And there's nothing going on with Kang right now in the news. Nothing. We're not missing anything. We're, you know, nothing to talk about. Nothing to
report there. So that's all still to be determined. And I think we always knew Guardians 3 was not going to be anything that pushed anything forward. We always knew that was going to be a culmination of where that was. So we weren't anticipating that to need to be. But those three entries plus Loki season 2, was that it this year, right? And Secret Invasion, which,
yes, yeah,
really fell flat.
We'll get into that a little bit,
right? I mean, from a storytelling perspective, to really light anything on fire, it fell flat in achieving that. So yeah, put all those things in the blender, this isn't surprising. But it is, I agree with you that I don't think it should at all be viewed as a condemnation of this product.
Yeah, I think what I'm afraid of is that Marvel's going to look at this and take all the, again, everything that fails, the internet makes a story as to why it didn't work. And I feel like most companies believe that story. Oh yeah, that's, you know, there's too much fatigue or regardless of whether the product is solid or not, there's a combination of factors that made it not the hit that it probably could have been, I think. But they're going to just see this as a failure and say, oh, we can't make movies like that anymore. So I don't know what this means for, like, Captain Marvel as a character, as, like, if they were ever planning a Captain Marvel 3 or what they would do with that. Yeah. But I'd actually, at this point, be surprised if they would do a third one with her. Like, yeah. I don't know if this is really enough. Like, this could be enough for them to decide, we don't know what to do with this character anymore. Let's just quietly push them aside and that's it. Which, for me, I think would be sad. I'd like to see... I'd like them to keep trying, because I think there's something here, and this movie doesn't give, especially Captain Marvel, the chance to really dive into the character, which is, I think, mm-hmm. one of my gripes with the film that we can get into, but... Yeah, before we, I guess, get into that stuff. But, Mike, what do you think? The superhero fatigue thing, is that a concern? What do you think?
I mean, obviously, it has to be at this point a concern. Is it the reason this movie didn't do well? I don't know, necessarily. I mean, Guardians did pretty good.
You know,
It didn't do gangbusters, but it did pretty good. I think my biggest issue that I think they ran into in terms of getting people out to see this was poor marketing. There was a little bit of marketing that happened that I remember seeing trailers and whatnot. Everything that I saw about this movie made it look like a standard rank and file formulaic movie from the trailers. All their trailers, all the promotional stuff gave me superhero fatigue from seeing the trailer. And this movie was not that.
Yeah.
Like, had they represented more of what to expect in the movie? Normally, I don't like that in a trailer. In this case, I feel like the trailers were misleading in a bad way, where they should have revealed more to get people to show up, because they would have let people know that it was going to be that fun. I think that's really where they fell short. And if we're seeing superhero fatigue, yeah, that wouldn't shock me. Not in the least. But I find it hard to say, you know? I think we'll really know about superhero fatigue when Fantastic Four hits, whenever the new schedule announced that that was coming. I think that's their next big chance to have a splash film that does a huge box office and really tests the market again to see where people are at with all of this.
Yeah.
I don't think this was that movie. This was never going to be that movie. This was never going to be the billion-dollar movie that, you know, say Guardians 3 could have been. I don't think it was. It probably got close. But I don't think this was ever going to be that. But could this have been $500 or $600 million had it been marketed better? Yeah, probably.
That was where I would have guessed this. Considering the first one made over $1 billion, I would have expected this to at least hit half of that.
I would put an asterisk on that, though. The perspective that I had heard in a few places was there were, and I'm going to digress a little bit here to make this point more salient. The first 4 years of the MCU, most people did not, number one, really realize it existed, not just like as a cohesive thing, but really like at all, until the Avengers hit. Most of the general audience had no clue and weren't paying attention. I even more believe that the crowds that you saw for Infinity War and Endgame and the obsession in the zeitgeist for it really didn't start to build probably until sometime in Phase 3. I don't think a ton of people got to... I mean, they definitely didn't get the Thor Dark World or maybe Guardians kind of, and were like, oh, this is related to other things. But it wasn't until Civil War, Doctor Strange, Black Panther, Thor Ragnarok. Like, I really do think in that last couple of years in Phase 3, the big swaths of the masses started to ride the wave with everybody else. Post that, they have not... And by that point, especially by Phase 3, they had a singular focus in a way, right? At some point, you understood, okay, between Phase 2, between Ultron and Infinity War, the path is to Thanos. Doctor Strange had nothing to do with Thanos, but the path is going there inevitably. Therefore, well,
yeah, to your point, there's not like some big event movie that's going to draw in the people to see it. Right.
Well, and correct.
It's not a bunch of threads connecting to one thing, really. Like,
right.
It's
there,
not,
there's been
as
nothing.
Clear as there's a bunch of Infinity Stones out there, and we're figuring out what they all are and where they all are. That whole connective tissue isn't. It may be there with this series of the MCU following around like Kang and whatnot, but it's not as clear and easy to follow for a standard audience.
Well, even less about the, or even the connective tissue stuff. I feel like to what Josh is saying, I think the people that follow that stuff see the connective tissue and they can sort of explain that to the general public. The general public sees the promotion around a big event movie like Infinity War mm-hmm. or Endgame. That's the stuff that's going to get people in the theater just because they're going to start seeing it everywhere and go, what the hell is that? Why is that such a big deal? The Marvel movies right now aren't getting to any of that. There's nothing that's really pulling in the general audience this way.
They're not giving us, who would otherwise be the conduit to the general public, they're not giving us anything to say to them.
Oh, okay. Well, point taken. You know what I mean? Yeah.
That's, and so if with the first, to your point about the box office differences between the Captain Marvel movies, Captain Marvel was situated right between Infinity War and Endgame. It came out like
the height of everything.
2.5 months, like not even. It came out a month and a half before Endgame.
It was March to May.
Yeah.
And I think Infinity War or Endgame ended up, they pushed it up a week or something. So it was like the last week of April, first week of May. It was 2 months max in between. So even if people didn't like, and how does Infinity War ends with a post-credit scene of Nick Fury pulling out that pager and calling somebody. So the very next chapter, whether people were aware of it or not, they're like, what the hell does that mean? This thing is related. It's the next step. Whether it's not the next step, I need to know this to get to the piece after that. It was really perfectly situated on top of being, you know, less than 2 years after Wonder Woman. So it had a very female-centric appeal, which is good. Yeah. That's great. It had a lot going for it at the time, and not anything against it. Without some of those, without that timing placement, I doubt the Marvels would have made a billion, or Captain Marvel rather. It probably would have been pretty high. Okay. It would have done standard MCU 600 to 800 million. But I doubt it would have done what it did. And it's not a strike against it. I think it was just really well placed. And that's good for it. That's fine. But I don't think it's apples to apples. A long way of getting to say and illustrate. I don't think necessarily that this one should have made a certain percentage of that because that made so much.
Okay. I got
it. No, but, and what I was getting to with like the differences in the plots between the two storylines is, in general, the Infinity Saga is a very simple plot. Big bad guy needs to get six things. Once he gets six things, he's unstoppable. That's pretty easy to understand. Even if you don't tell them what all the six things are, where they are, all that, needs to get a thing, becomes unstoppable. A multiversal plot line is complicated before you even get into details. When it's like, well, you got to talk about, you know, this version of this character instead of that version of the character instead of this version. And you start getting more and more complicated trying to include a multiverse and trying to explain that to people that haven't read it for years. We've read this stuff for years. At least I assume you guys have read the comics about multiverses. I know at the very least Brian has read it with Spider-Man at a bare minimum. Yeah. And it's there, and we get the idea. Trying to explain to somebody that doesn't read any comics, that has no concept of what a multiverse could be, that there's, well, I mean, that's just a different Spider-Man, or like that. But like that Reed Richards we saw in that movie, well, that wasn't like the one that's in like our world. Well,
I guess there's really only two examples right now of movies that are really focusing on the multiverse stuff, right? Doctor Strange and Spider-Man. Spider-Man made a shit ton of money.
Yeah, but it's Spider-Man, so it's going to. That's like slapping Star Wars on it and being like, well, it made a bunch of money. Like, yeah,
it's still a concept that, like you said, is probably far-fetched for general movie-going audiences, but they still saw the movie, and most of them probably saw it multiple
times.
They did,
but they also...
And it brought back characters they had known, too.
Correct.
Like, it brought back Toby, and it brought back Andrew Garfield. They knew them already, so it was an easy... It was actually a really smart way to introduce the MCU audience into the multiverse.
Right.
But I'd also say Loki's playing with it.
But I'm not going to assume that people watching the movies are seeing Loki.
No, but I understand my point, though. Like, you're getting every step further into the multiverse is more complicated.
Okay. Yeah.
And
agreed.
And that's where our plot line for the big bad was supposed to be. We don't know what they're going to do now with the whole Jonathan Majors thing.
There's nothing going on with Kang. Everything's fine. No news to report. We've got nothing to talk about.
Nothing to see here. That's where the dog's sitting in the room on fire, where everything's fine. Yep. That's us right now. That's not us. That's them.
Yeah.
But we don't know what they're going to do. But that's the plot line they had been working on as the major villain, was this multiversal villain. And it's really tough to explain that to somebody.
Yeah.
Whereas big bad guy needs to get things to become unstoppable. It's pretty easy.
Yeah, good point.
So
it also throw into what you're saying, throw in the fact that like at least half or more of the Phase 4 and 5 stories have nothing to do with multiverse. WandaVision has nothing to do with it.
Up to one event. They're playing a whole bunch of different storylines and things that don't seem connected as much as the original movies did.
It could be, but that's sort of my point, is like you can't put out 15, I haven't counted, so I'm just saying, 15 different products, and then if that is true, I'm assuming then like be shocked that people are having these discussions. Like you can't be shocked that people don't get it if it hasn't been that clear yet. That's too many to not make your point. Is that fair?
Well, I think the only difference there is, I think, like, we're basically into, you know, the Marvel did three phases, and they culminated into their big Avengers tie-ins that led to all this stuff with Thanos and stuff, and we're still in Phase 4, which, for them,
almost
being viewed as, we are in 5?
Yeah, Black Panther was Wakanda Forever was the end of Phase 4. Ant-Man was the beginning of 5.
Point taken. Okay, so, and I guess my point's still kind of, will make sense, but Phase 4 was essentially sort of like, I guess, as far as Marvel's concerned, their Phase 1, which in Phase 1, yes, we got a couple Infinity Stones. We weren't really sure that they were Infinity Stones at the time, but we didn't know how all that stuff tied in. We didn't know where they were going until we got to Avengers. Now, yes, we're into back then in Phase 2, then we started seeing more Infinity Stones, understanding how they all connected, and then through Phase 3, we knew Thanos was the guy. This is what he's trying to do. We need to stop him. We are in the middle of the multiverse saga. So Phase 4 didn't really touch on a lot of multiverse stuff, a little bit, planting the seeds. Phase 5 is diving in a little bit more with Loki. This movie leans into some stuff too, which we'll get into. But I think, and whatever else is in Phase 5, I think is really starting to lay the groundwork to sort of try to make it make sense. And then by the time we get to 6, that's where we're finally going to see, oh, okay, that's why this was there, and that's why this was there. Hopefully. That's how I think they're trying to map it out. But at the rate things are changing and delays and shuffles and other behind the scenes shit that is going on, we're about to see how flexible their plan really is and if they can actually still make this work, or if, you know, another 8 to 10 years of planning is just going to go down the shitter because of stuff out of some people's control, between, you know, striking and other, like I said, behind the scenes stuff that has not happened. We're not talking about it right now. And you know, we'll see, but I feel like they still have to have a plan. And I think, you know, beginning with the earlier phases, you don't know what the plan is. You're probably not supposed to know how it all makes sense and fits together. And it's not until you get to the later event type movies that suddenly all the dots, when you go back and watch, will connect better when you have the newer stuff in mind, I guess.
Go ahead, Mike.
Something else, like, because, you know, we started out the question here with you wanting us to address superhero fatigue, and hear me out on this. Something they could have done that they didn't do because they wanted to make more money now, which is what they seem to always be concerned with, is right now, instead of like setting it up better. End the Infinity Saga. If you want to have, you know, Far From Home happen post Endgame. And to me, you should just end it with Endgame. Cut it off there. Don't release a single movie for 2 or 3 years. Step back, give the audiences a breather, and make it so that when that next thing is coming, that hype can build up to it, and it gives you more time to plan things out and maybe not cast someone problematic as your next big villain. And figure things out a lot more over that time, because, you know, the original pace of the MCU in Phase 1, they were releasing, what, one movie a year, and then two movies a year was like, whoa.
About.
That's, you know.
I think 2008 was Iron Man and Hulk, and then 2009 was Thor.
2011 was Thor and Cap, but yeah, I think
Cap was in a year on its own, but yeah, maybe I had it wrong.
Yeah, Cap and Thor were just as close together pretty much as
was anything
Iron Man and Hulk were.
No.
Okay.
It, like, there was gaps there because Avengers was, what, 2012, right?
2012, yeah.
So.
And then you had a whole year off till Iron Man 3.
Yep.
And so you had these
big breaks and less pacing and more time to really work out what's going on and make each piece feel more important when you're going to go to see it when there's just one that year.
Well, if they stick to what they're talking about, I guess that's what they're kind of leaning towards now. We're only getting, what, Deadpool next year. That's it.
Yeah.
That's good. That's going to be our
everything
Marvel
else
2024
got,
movie.
Yeah, everything got pushed in. There was like three, maybe four that were even like pre-strikes, I think three or four that were supposed to be out by next year. And now it's one.
Yeah.
And I think it could have worked the same way where they take the time off and they slowly start to build. And then once they have things rolling and audiences are in, that's when you ramp it up to two or three movies a year again to get to the end and then take another break.
It
could have rolled the same way to build up properly as opposed to just, man, there's just shit everywhere and you got to go see all of it right now or you're going to be behind. And that was their selling point, it feels like. Instead of selling top-end content, they were selling, oh, you're going to be behind. They were selling FOMO.
That's why these movies get me.
I would say where they've dropped the baton is in those intervals, eventually you got to Avengers. So people who were not talking about it or didn't really care saw this thing they hadn't seen before. And everybody was talking about it. They were telling them about it. And it was quality. It was good. Let's be honest. Phase 2 didn't have that. Ultron, nobody really cared that much about Ultron when it happened, in the same way that like Phase 2 did not culminate with the same type of public fanfare that Phase 1 did. Along the way, there was probably a standout with Winter Soldier, and Guardians was a big hit surprise in a way, but as a big piece, like it didn't have like a check-in point in the way that the first Avengers did. Then the next check-in point was maybe Ragnarok and Black Panther, because Ragnarok was such a departure and it was freaking funny. Then Black Panther was so huge as a cultural movie. Then immediately on its heels, you get Infinity War. They haven't had those check-in points since they started Phase 4. Nothing has hit in a way that, oh, okay, well, this, I haven't seen like these two movies and that one show, but this one movie was huge and different and cool and was a game changer for all of this. It's been 2.5 years, and like I keep saying, like 12 to 15 things, and it still hasn't happened. That's where the baton has gotten dropped. That's where they need to pick it up from. That was the failure, if you will, of... It could be very long-form storytelling, and I might eat crow in 3 or 4 years once we get the Secret Wars or Fantastic Four, whatever the hell happens, and it might all look amazing. And I'll admit that when it comes, but...
Gonna look
the reason people
step.
Are yes
we don't talk about that here.
The reason people are having the conversations that we're having and people are writing the articles that they are is because of that. There has been no intermediary check-in point for both the general public or consistent fans to really rally around or care about.
Starting to wonder too if just the amount of shows that went to Disney Plus suddenly was like people thought they had to watch it, so they just checked out from the movies. Like, oh, I can't see that movie because I didn't watch the other 5 shows that came before.
You start to pile up stuff that people feel not caught up. And
right, yeah.
There's that. And like I said, back to my original waiting 3 years thing. Imagine they stop for 3 years releasing movies. No shows, no movies, no nothing. And then they announce, we're starting a new phase. And the first movie whether it be X-Men or Fantastic Four. You know what I mean? Whichever, because they acquired mm-hmm. the rights to both around the same time, right? It was the same deal that got them in both. So in, say, 3 years after Endgame, they're like, all right, cool, here's the, you know, and they just shock drop a trailer for the new Fantastic Four movie in the MCU. All of a sudden, your hype level's through the roof, and you've got a massive movie. And they just, you know, could have.
I mean, I'm all about the surprise, like, trailers or supply, like, surprise movies that they're making, but Marvel cannot get away with that anymore. They're too high profile that they can fly under the radar to do that kind of stuff.
Well, that's why you wait 3 years.
Even still,
had they waited 3 years for the first two, people would have been paying really close attention. After that second year, would people just start to be like, eh, maybe they just...
No, I beg to differ. I think Marvel's at a place where they're just like, anything that's under Disney is going to get the press. So, yeah. I don't know. I would love it, and for the person in me that loves to avoid trailers and just go see a movie as much as I can, like, that would be the ideal scenario, but there's no way.
Well, that and to me, the, like, I mean, that the other thing that's for like someone like you that it like normally will not watch the trailers, but you see something and you don't know what it is and you've never heard of it, and they're just popping it in there, say, on, I don't know, whatever DC movie was most recently released at that time, and they're like, here you go.
Yeah.
And they surprise you, and you have to watch it, and you see it, and you're like, holy shit, the MCU's back. It's the same thing that Vince McMahon and every wrestling promoter has done for eternity in pro wrestling. You let somebody go away, let the audience forget, and then you bring them back to give them a huge push again. It's a simple script, but it works.
I mean, the other thing that I always think about, too, and I don't know if this has any bearing on them trying to push out movies maybe quicker rather than sitting on them, but just people's contracts. Like, they sign these people up for 10 movies or 10 years or what, you know, whatever it is. But the longer you wait, the older these people get. It's like, I think they're really trying to get stuff in while people can still do them. Like, I don't know, some of these contracts, because they're going to last 10 years for 3 movies or 4 movies, whatever it is. And maybe some people just want to get them done. Like, maybe the actors are just like, I don't want to be locked in that much. But if you could do it in 6 years, sure, I'll do that. I just don't want to be locked in for 10.
Well, and that was actually, I know this is completely off topic, but that was, you know, the new Percy Jackson series is hitting Disney. And that was my concern with that to happen again, because that's what happened the first time they tried to make Percy Jackson movies, was they didn't do it quick enough. And then all of a sudden we had to believe that these people that are in their mid-20s are supposed to be early teenagers. And it's like, well, this just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
And so they're starting this new series, and I'm like, man, I hope they keep the pacing right so that these kids aren't clearly adults by the time this is over, because Percy's not supposed to be an adult.
Yeah.
So trying to squeeze things in, it can be good, but it can also be bad. And, you know, I think there's way, like, that example is a good way to do it. I don't know. It's
it feels like they lost
the plot for me.
I feel like we could just keep going around and around, but I feel like now that I've realized we've talked like 40 minutes and not even really got to the movie yet, that we should probably get into the movie.
Probably.
I know we want to get into the spoiler stuff, because that's probably where the meat of this is going to go. But general spoiler-free thoughts for the movie. Give me some bullet point stuff that you got, Mike, for general spoiler-free.
It was fun. I mean, you said it at the beginning. This was a fun movie. The bright spots are very numerous. You know, I could list pretty much only one person on the cast disappointed me. And that was the villain. That was the only bit of it that just wasn't there for me. And the rest of it, like, again, without getting into the spoilers, this is a fun movie for people of all ages. This is a fun movie for kids. It's a fun movie for adults. Is it the best written script? No, but you're suspending your disbelief. You're watching superheroes here. This is not... I'm not going to be splitting hairs on whether or not everything that they're saying makes sense, because it didn't, but that doesn't matter. It's, you know, does quantum entanglement do this, that, or the other? I don't friggin' know, man. It's not real, so how do I know what it would actually do? So, yeah, it was good. It's worth seeing. Don't cost yourself of this fun movie for whatever person's review you heard of it that was negative. You're going to have fun if you watch it.
Josh, what do you got?
I would echo a lot of the same. I think Iman Vellani as Kamala Khan continues to just be the most charming thing. I enjoyed Ms. Marvel, the series, quite a bit. And maybe it's because she's so green as an actress and like, as a, you know, in the profession that she still, I can't imagine how difficult it must be to be a real life fan, which is basically how she got this job, to be a real life fan, but play a real life fan as your character, but sell that to an audience as acting.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's like, why they cast her, is because that's so much of Kamala's actual story is her being a fan and having someone who is that much of a fan. It made sense.
But
that's why it
sometimes
works,
I agree, but it's like, so for instance, like I'm a musician. I play an instrument. If you asked me to play that instrument badly, I would have a hard time doing it. And I would have a hard time convincing you that I don't know how to play that instrument. She has to like have this trick where it's like a meta trick of being a legit real world fan, and her character is that, but it has to come off as, you know, an acting performance. And I think there's a real trick to that. I think there's a success to that. I don't think it's as easy as it sounds. I agree on the villain comments. I liked the actress. I appreciate that they tried to get me a bit more invested in the villain's motivations. Otherwise, unfortunately, and again, because maybe this story doesn't move anything, like we just spent all that time talking, it doesn't move anything else forward. It doesn't feel like it achieves. It just feels like a sequel. That's all it does. It just feels like a sequel. The villain otherwise felt, you know, very forgettable, not as bad as like Malekith per se, or like kind of on par with Yellowjacket in a way. Like, it's a villain, it's a character, you need an antagonist and an opposing force, and this was it. But
yeah.
Otherwise, I don't have anything against like the actress or what they gave her to do per se. It was just the you needed something there to be the opposing force, and that just happened to be it.
I'll give you a quick example on that. Both of you, close your eyes so you're not looking at your screens. What was the villain's name?
Oh yeah, I didn't. I have IMDb up, but I was going to use that for reference because I don't remember.
I don't know.
That's why I said close your eyes, because I know you probably did.
Yeah. To be fair, I mean, number one, I know it's Kree. And if you asked me what Jude Law's character's name in Captain Marvel was, I couldn't tell you that either.
His was... Oh, shit.
See?
I was about to say Veers, but I was like, no, that was what they called her. Fuck.
Yeah. So, but point taken, Mark. Exactly.
Yeah, I also would say he's very forgettable. Right? Like, in that movie, like, he isn't as present as a villain either. Like, he's kind of there and then gone and so on. But yes, I just mean, like you're saying, like, I'd put this villain personally below even Malekith and Yellowjacket. Mostly because I can name Malekith and Yellowjacket.
Fair.
That's all. That's the only point I was getting at. I would put him below them, too. Like, whatever his name was in the first Captain Marvel.
Say maybe not Malekith, but Yellowjacket, at least I sort of remember from like Marvel comics and stuff. So that one kind of sticks just because I remember the comic stuff. Yeah. But Malekith, and if this villain was in the comics, I don't know anything about them. So it doesn't help remember. Yeah, I assume so, but it's just not one I'm familiar with from the comics. It doesn't stick. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to echo a lot of what these guys said. I think, like I said, the movie's fun. I think it's worth checking out for sure. Villain we've just talked about, mostly forgettable. I don't know where I'd rank them as far as like some of the worst villains. It's down there. I don't know if I would call them the worst. Like Josh said, Iman Vellani is a fucking rock star. She is by far the highlight of this movie for me. And we sort of already touched on it, but if you haven't watched Ms. Marvel on Disney Plus, please do. It's great. The biggest, I think, tick for me for this movie that like I'd knock it a couple points is the runtime. It's mm-hmm. under 2 hours. It's like an hour, 45 minutes. And I think you feel it, not like in the action or anything, but more character moments. I feel like there's a lot of times when characters, something happens, they look like they're going to have this conversation and start getting to something deep. And then the conversation is very short. To me, it feels like they cut lines of dialogue and stuff that should be important to dig into these characters. And either they didn't know how to do it or they didn't know how to fit the story. So they just got rid of it. And I think it's very noticeable for situations that they set up that never get a payoff because the characters never talk about what just happened. And that's the stuff that needs the extra 15, 20 minutes of this movie. And I think it would get points in the right direction if they included that stuff. So I don't know what happened there. But I felt like it was noticeable and it really kind of pulled me out of it a few times there.
Good observation. I agree.
All right. So we'll get into the spoilers, and we'll go from here. So if you have not seen The Marvels and don't want spoiled, pause this now, come back after watching the film. If you're into the spoiler type of thing, feel free to listen on. Either way, there will be spoilers to follow.
Wee-oo, wee-oo, spoiler! Wee-oo, wee-oo, spoiler! You know, something like that.
All right, so we're back for spoilers. Typically, I try to have like questions and bullet point stuff. I tell these guys I don't have a lot. Like, I know there's some stuff we want to dig into that are probably the bigger MCU as a whole things, X-Men incursions, all that kind of stuff will probably take some time. But I want to give this movie its due first. So, anything specific in the movie that you guys kind of want to touch on that we can with spoilers?
I'm going to...
Okay, Josh, go ahead. I'll start with you.
I just had one on deck real quick. I'm going to start with one that I think is the... I'm going to start with a negative, but just so I can get that out of the way, because I do have a lot of positive feelings about this. My one biggest point actually relates to what you just said right before the spoiler warning, which is it feels like they sacrificed certain pieces of character growth, perhaps, or conversation on the altar of something, whether it was somebody's directive of like, get this under 2 hours or cut it down, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But the one at least thing that I think really needed strengthened was the conflict, if you will, and the resolution of which between Carol and Monica.
I was actually thinking of another one, but go ahead.
At the point where it finally gets addressed and like, they give you a fleeting moment or two in WandaVision when you first meet Monica, that you understand that there is something she's holding her tongue on as it regards Carol. So for like almost 3 years, because that was January of 2021 that WandaVision came out, we've been, if you've remembered that, like, okay, there is some piece of resolution that has to happen there. Eventually in the movie, it gets to the point where they have to face each other and acknowledge it and whatnot. I just feel that, number one, they didn't go as deep on allowing the characters to explore that as they needed to with each other. And then it went a little too fast. Like, that could have... Yes. That could have had a much more impactful arc to between the two of them. Whereas the way it was executed felt like once we eventually get to it, it's a roadblock we need to climb over so that we can do the rest of the plot.
Yes. Yeah.
We need to get over this hurdle so that we can give our attention to the other stuff. And this is a barrier that we'll just eventually have to address. So we're addressing it now and we do it. It was too shallow and too quick, and it really could have benefited from being deeper and longer.
And there's actually one, the point that I was going to make, because I actually kind of forgot about that one until you just brought it up. But there's also something similar, I feel like, between Kamala and Carol, where Kamala looks up to Carol. Kamala wants to be the hero that saves everybody. There's literally a point in this movie where Carol leaves people to die. Because she cannot save them. And that looks like it's going to be a point of contention between her and Kamala. And they land the ship after warping out of there or whatever, or not being able to do it. They look like they're going to have this whole big conversation about this, and nothing happens. It just falls away. And I felt like that was a conversation, some lines of dialogue that I felt really could have helped both characters you could have forwarded the plot that way and seen how they reconciled whether or not, because I don't even think they really ever bring that up. They kind of just say, this is how it has to be. She mm-hmm. kind of maybe, like Kamala, I think, maybe kind of forgives her, and then that's kind of it. They move on. I wanted more deeper stuff there.
Yeah, I feel like that could have played a lesson of, like, you know, teaching Kamala that you save as many as you can, but there's no possible way you can save everyone or fix everything that ever goes wrong. You have to do the best that you can and accept the losses.
Right.
And that's something that I guess anybody that's supposed to be Kamala's age has to learn at some point.
And I could have had
to be doing what she wants to be doing.
I mean, I could have had it even go the other way, where Kamala is so hell-bent on, like, I need to save everybody, that maybe that gives Carol another spark to try harder or something like that. But both characters just seem like they end up in the same spot that started. Like, I don't see any type of growth or difference there by the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And I think the other conversation I think that happens really quickly is the realization and the reveal that Carol is kind of the bad guy for the Kree. That she went in and wiped a bunch of people out, now they see her as the villain. And she confesses that, and then they just kind of hug it out after that, and that's it. Like, that's something else we should talk about and try to see where this goes, because that's a big thing.
That's an overly idealistic scenario to how war works, where, you know, it doesn't matter what side of a war you're on, there is always a villain. And if you're on one side, the other side's the villain, and if you're on the other side, you're the villain. Like, it's,
yeah.
There is no clear answer to that, you know, like, each side views each other as the villain, and she did what she thought she was doing was right. And in the real world, in real situations, people don't just hug it out after that.
Right, yeah.
That's not what happens, you know what I mean? Like, no matter what we're talking about, you know, not to get too deep into it, but if Osama bin Laden came over after 9/11 and was like, hey guys, I'm really sorry and I accept my responsibility for what happened and all that, can we hug it out? Do you think anyone would have given the man a hug? No. That's not how war works. It's just not what happens. So, in this scenario, yeah, it's unfortunate, but I don't know. I kind of agree. Like, it seemed like a weird thing to have happen. I feel like that's a weight that she should have to carry as part of her character.
Yeah, that's something you have to take and grow with, I think. Right. Yeah, and just be like, oh, it's fine. Everything's fine. No, that's something I think that needs to get a little bit deeper. And I was just expecting, I think, more dialogue, and or at least if they're going to wrap it up that way, earn it a little bit more than just like two sentences and we're fine. I don't know.
Yeah, the way things are surrounding war is not all sunshines and rainbows at the end of the day, no matter who wins.
Right.
It's so, yeah, having that weight would, I don't know, better for the character, especially since Carol's supposed to be a military person before she becomes a superhero. Like, she's supposed to have an understanding of that, you would think.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I mean, that being the case, sort of like, I think maybe Josh talked about it, of like the sort of the villain's motivations. Like, I liked that reveal that Carol going back and destroying the computer mind thing. I can't remember what they called it.
The Supreme Intelligence.
Yes. Yeah. That destroying that caused the Kree to have this whole environmental problem, and then, you know, they looked at her as the villain type of thing. Like, I liked that reveal, and I think I wanted that to sit more in the movie and resonate a little bit more and try to find another way around that. But yeah, I thought at least a smart story decision how that came about.
Yeah, and I think, like, her going and righting the wrongs that are righting the problems that occurred because of her actions, I think that was a strong storytelling point. That was a good thing to do.
Right, yeah.
But I don't know. Just the full conclusion of it being everybody's chipper with it afterwards, I don't know. Like, there, people still, you know, presumably they lost a lot of loved ones.
Yeah.
And, you know.
I think from a pacing standpoint, and I heard this as a suggestion elsewhere, that the suggestion was they should have opened the movie with the illustration of what Carol did. Give you that up front, so that when she's having these, because I think how they positioned it was she's having these like fever dreams and we're supposed to care to know what the explanation is. And I did, just because I recognized the storytelling mechanism, but I kind of didn't all that much. And then when she finally explains it and then tacks that on to and Monica, that's why I stayed away so long, because I didn't think I could face you. I felt I had all these things to try to set right for my actions. At least showing the viewer up front what had happened and then taking us on her journey, that's showing us, oh, you are trying to hide this from people.
Yeah.
When she then finally fesses to it all, sort of the breakdown that she could experience could be greater because she's finally succumbing to the weight of what she's been carrying and trying to keep from people in a way of not having to reveal that to those, you know, close to her and whatnot. I think that may have positioned better, because you could still have the same revelation of her explaining what the both what the after effect of it was, and then, well, this is why I was gone for 20 years, and
right,
and it's why I stayed away, and I'm trying to make it up to people. Like, you could still have all of that where it happened, but yeah, just the
that would be something
idea
I feel
for
like
me.
like an editing exercise. Like, start the movie with that and see if you can start the character at her lowest and then work her back up as the movie goes through.
And you don't even necessarily need to show that her action had the effect that it did. That
right,
be
just show her blowing up Supreme Intelligence and then fixing the holes as we're going through the movie. And then, like you
yes.
said, not until you get to the explanation
because
of this is what caused the holes.
And
because that could still be sort of a twist.
Then it would rope back in the villain's motivations, because by opening the movie with that event, you've kind of put a bow on the events of the first movie. Instead of it having
right.
to be a flashback in the middle of everything, you're tying off what she left the first movie to go do.
Yeah.
But it's not until you see, you know, and she doesn't really understand what the effect was. I don't think she understands that this is why the villain is doing some of what she's doing. So she's coming to that realization herself, knowing that it had the effect, but not really understanding the connection. Yeah, just like as you said, like an editing exercise. I wonder if it could pull things together any better.
Yeah. Mike, anything stood out to you that you want to talk about? Or sorry, Josh, you have something else?
No. Please.
Okay.
I don't think there's anything else negative that I would have to say. If there's something that stood out to me as different and fun, you know, there's a lot of fun things. You know, one that I'll touch on very shortly is just Kamala's family is as entertaining as always, and I just want that to be a permanent sitcom. Like, even if Kamala's not a part of it, just their family, I just want to watch more of that.
I feel like we brought that up when we talked about Miss Marvel, like the show, because I think at that point they were listed as in the cast for the movie, and I feel like I remember Josh just saying he was really excited to see that whole family in the movie.
Oh, probably.
Yeah, they're great.
Just as Kamala is in some ways a living avatar for us as fans in this immersion experience, her family is the rest of the real world too. They are all just so regular people thrust into the middle of all of it that they don't become... I'm kind of glad, in a way, like, they did not give the family anything extraordinary or overly important to do.
Yeah.
In this. It wasn't like, oh, look at what important role they play because they did a thing or some secret information is revealed or this and that. Like, they are just regular-ass people. And they get taken to S.W.O.R.D. in space. They get, like, all this, but they are still just regular people. And they retain that. I think that's an important, effective element that they have interjected to any of these stories.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, the next thing up on that, on the fun list, we're just going to talk about fun, because this movie was fun, and I want to talk about why.
Do it all.
We're going to hit a peak at some point, where we're going to discuss the most fun. The next most fun thing before that is the musical Planet.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
That was so out of left field.
What a fun idea that I never saw coming. And having to speak everything in song. As soon as they said that, I said, oh god, this should be weird. And it was perfect for what you would expect out of it, where like you can talk in a normal voice and they don't understand you. Like, that was fantastic.
Two things about that. One of the persons that I saw the movie with definitely just checked out from that point of the movie, was like, nope, I'm out. I can't do it. This is too weird. I'm done. And from then on, I think their opinion of the movie tanked. I fucking loved it. It to me, it just felt like Disney making fun of itself, which I just kind of love.
Yep.
Like, we are totally aware of what this looks like in a movie, in like animation or whatever, and we're just going to make it a planet, because why the fuck not?
Yeah. Yeah, if you didn't enjoy that, I get it. Some people don't like musicals. That's a thing. People, some
yeah, that
people
was,
enjoy
I guess,
them,
the,
some
just,
people don't.
The Jump the Shark movie. That was the line. They crossed the line. That was enough for them, and that was it.
I'm somebody that's usually in the side of not really caring too much about musicals. Not really disliking, just not seeking them out, I guess. Like, if they happen, like in this case, all right, you know, I was there for it. It was a lot of fun. There's other fun to be had, but let's just go right to the top. And the whole Flerken evacuation was the silliest and also cutest and also most horrifying thing you could imagine in this movie.
It was definitely a mix of emotions, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so much going on there, which is fun. You know, it's sending all these different messages and weird things going on. It was fun. You have all these people having, you know, if you're unaware, a Flerken is, I don't know, a cat tentacle monster of some sort. We really don't get a full explanation of what Flerkens are, but we know they lay these weird eggs now. That cause an infestation of Flerkens, and they're friendly. They're more useful than a cat, which doesn't take much.
So, side question. I don't know if Josh ever went back and watched the trailers, but Mike, did you watch all the trailers for this movie?
I did not, no.
I would probably say no.
The only reason I'm asking, I was curious if, and I didn't go back to watch them myself to try to check, but if they would have a scene in the movie where it looks like all the Flerken are eating people. But in a trailer, you'd think, oh god, the Flerken are eating all these people. But when you see it in the context of the movie, they are saving all these people. And it's just complete, like, reverse expectation type of thing that I thought would be fun to include in the trailer, just to completely try to misdirect people for when the actual movie happens.
Yeah. And on top of that, we also get Kamala's initial reaction to a Flerken, where she doesn't know what's coming and it happens. And I think to myself, like, boy, that would be everybody ever. That if you're just...
Yep.
It doesn't matter if you're teleported there or not. So, you know, the additional being freaked out from teleporting, forget that. Just the idea that, oh, this cat just did what? And you have no idea what's about to happen. Yeah, that was a great little moment there to set up for later. And the cats in space thing as well, you know, well, I guess, you know, Flerkens, but whatever, was also amazing. Well, no, I mean, when they're like traveling.
Oh, I thought you meant the song from Cats that they play during that scene.
No. I was referring to like the zero gravity cats, like the...
Oh, yes.
You know, like the Flerkens in zero gravity as they're traveling. Like, you know, some people aren't cat people. I get that. I wouldn't necessarily qualify myself as a cat person, but I mean, cats are fucking cute and like they're stupid. People think cats are smart. They're stupid. And watching them have to deal with zero gravity, just fun. Just so much fun.
Do you have anything else on your fun list, or should we go to see if Josh has anything left?
I want to add to the Flerkens. The message that eventually quickly they get over the PA system that is just so calm and matter of fact of staff, please stop running. Allow the Flerkens to eat you.
Yeah.
Just over and over. Like, I was dying. I could easily see like that. That could have almost been like a Jump the Shark scene, or it could have easily gone too far. I think it was contained just perfect enough.
I mean, I feel like if you hit the musical part and you can stick with the movie after that, you're in for whatever else happens.
Oh,
like,
granted.
I still think that's the peak of weirdness. And if you're in, you're in for the rest. It's all good.
Sure. Like, in a vacuum, the Flerkens could be a Jump the Shark.
Right.
But you throw in the fact that they're playing, I think they're playing Memories from Cats. And
see, that was lost on me. I had no idea.
I believe they're playing. They're playing the song "Memory." Like it's the only song that everybody knows. Memories from the corner.
Apparently,
of
these
my
two
eye.
Guys don't know it.
If you heard it, you would know it. I'm just terrible. But they're playing that, and then you have this like announcement coming from the PA system, telling people like submit, allow yourself to be eaten. It all worked so well. I agree with Mike.
The other fun thing for me that I don't know how much we really talked about already, but the whole entanglement of powers thing was cool as fucking hell. I think the choreography they did for the fight scenes, incorporating all that stuff together. I don't know how they like special effects wise choreographed that and made it work. I thought it looked awesome. The fight scenes where they actually started using that as a crutch for them, I thought was really fucking cool. Even the little stupid training they were doing in the ship, trying to get used to each other entangling, was awesome.
I like the training more than the fights. Their training sequences of learning how to do this, because part of me said to myself, like, boy, I hope they don't do what they could do and not have them figure out how this works so that they know how to use it. Let's not skip that part. Like, part of me was saying that, don't skip this part. They can't just be awesome at this automatically. Mm. And then we get a training sequence. And it's like,
we get the montage.
Yeah, like, there's no way you would know how to harness that without practicing.
Yeah.
And watching them go through what they went through to practice it was awesome. Like, the way that they practiced, I guess. Like, the way they set that up was a lot of fun.
One other thing I might poo-poo for this... Well, maybe not for the movie, but I think more... I think Sam Jackson and Nick Fury kind of get the short end of the stick for this one, because... And it's maybe probably more a knock for Secret Invasion, that his character should have went through some shit between if you factor in Secret Invasion before this movie. And this movie acknowledges nothing.
The only thing I can think is that timeline-wise, for whatever reason... This have because this should have actually probably released
before.
First.
Okay, then that would make more sense.
At some point this year, at least, Secret Invasion was supposed to release in June, and this was initially supposed to be in July. But initially, if you go back a year or two more, I believe The Marvels was supposed to be out sometime in 2022, actually. So I think it should have, in the beginning at least, been released first. But if you really wanted to play with timelines, the pass that I'm giving it for that is I think this takes place before. Because also, if it didn't, all of the Skrull shit that takes place in Secret Invasion, how is that not a topic of conversation with Brie Larson, with Captain Marvel, who was intimately involved with them? Like,
right.
That's the only explanation.
The ultimate superhuman enigma that's out there in whatever, I can't remember the name of the character from Secret Invasion.
But Emilia Clarke, though.
Yeah, Emilia Clarke's
like basically the Super Skrull.
She's more than Super Skrull, though.
But she's
more dangerous than Super Skrull ever was.
Yeah.
And they basically put God in the MCU now. Like, there's no like.
Don't get me started on all the stuff the MCU has now set up over the last couple of years and not come back to. Like, I'm still looking at you, the Eternals. It's been 2.5 years. Let's fucking do something already.
I just mean they created their Dr. Manhattan, is what they did with Emilia Clarke's character.
Which we'll probably never see again. Like, I would be surprised if they acknowledge that character ever again.
Who knows? We'll have to wait and see. But, yeah, it would probably be better if they didn't. And they just let people forget because
no one watched Secret Invasion. I think it's the one Marvel show we could probably all agree on that is probably the least fun to watch. Like, there's not a lot of redeeming stuff with Secret Invasion, and that comic book storyline is fucking cool. And I really expected so much more from that show, and it let me down so hard that is the one that's like that's the one that hurts me, I think, the most right now, because I think I just went into that expecting it to be really, really cool, and it wasn't.
It could have been a lot more.
Yeah.
And it should have been an event. It should have been a massive event, and it should have been something, maybe even instead of Kang. They could have done this as a Thanos, where we're finding out over the course of the entire phases, like, oh shit, Cap was a Skrull. Like, and then people go, what? And, you know, shit like that can play out. They did it with one character.
Who turned out to not actually be a Skrull. Oh, I thought you meant Rhodey.
No. I was talking about Nick. Like, they're like, oh, then they, like, what movie was it they, like, foreshadow that where like Nick Fury's been off planet for
it was
however
far,
long.
Far it was well far Spider, from home yeah, far and from no home. No way yeah. home yeah
yeah so yeah
but
like
yeah, but
let's I digress. Feel like there's a weird point in the timeline there so.
Yeah we're getting to the point where they're and maybe it just goes back to the quantity over quality where there's too much going out there that too many open storylines that they're not tying up.
Yeah.
And that's for continuity whore like me, it's getting really irritating that this stuff's just hanging out there and I'm waiting for years for it to tie up and nothing's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else specific about the movie? Cause I think we'll probably want to dive into some of the bigger stuff at the end here, but
at the end, but the only thing I would say is I liked a lot of the versatility that they used with, Kamala's solid light powers.
Oh yeah.
I was a little taken aback that they really didn't lean in, like other than like one or two moments, didn't lean into the like the big huge fist pump fist punch kind of thing. Yeah. Like in this iteration they're still they're almost Green Lanterning it where it's like it's not really her fist getting big, it's her manipulation of light getting big and use it. But they did that a bit more in the show and I was a little surprised they didn't use that as one of her tools more with not just her fist but just in different ways like that. That's all. But other than that, no, I
personally
have a pretty high opinion of this movie.
I was personally kind of hoping when she got the second bangle that she would turn more into the comic version of Kamala Khan and instead of it being hard light it was actually her that was getting bigger and doing these things. That would have been cool. Obviously didn't happen, but still.
So, it may, I don't want to really, I guess, dig too into this. Maybe this is more rhetorical question, but the series established her as a mutant, right? So, are the hard light powers part of the mutation, or are they part of the bangle? Like, if she didn't have the bangle, could she still do the powers?
I think the bangle is giving her access to that, and that she may find out that she can do the other stuff at some point.
Okay.
Because if I remember correctly, Kamala becomes a mutant in the comics as an Inhuman.
Right.
Like it is the Terrigen Mist that turns Kamala, not like traditional
natural
mutation
born.
From birth. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So I could see there being a dual answer to that question. Like retains her hard light powers but discovers her mutant power. Because the way they introduce mutant powers in X-Men is always some event happens in their life, very emotional, very strong event that activates their powers when they are adolescents, which she's still supposed to be at this age. So we could see that event at some point for Kamala.
Maybe that's a good segue into Brian, if you were veering toward the post-credit scenes in some way, because a lot of this could manifest in whatever Kamala's next chapter is, which they very blatantly smack you on the face with it. Are leaning right into Young Avengers. Do you want to start there?
Which I fucking loved. Like her sitting there like Nick Fury and recruiting Kate. I fucking love that. Oh, it's so great.
I was thinking about it today. The only thing that I think that could improve it is if along the way of her speech, if Kate kept interrupting her in a way with like little things, like every statement that she's making, like, oh, you thought you were the only one? No, wait, the only one, what? Like, just little things to, like, I don't know, make it a little more awkward for Kamala to try to deliver it. As far as interplay, that's the only thing I can think could improve it. Otherwise, same. When she started into it, like, three words in, I'm like, oh, they're doing this. They're doing this. Okay.
Yeah, I honestly just want to see Kamala just interact with as many Marvel characters as possible just because I want to see her play off everybody because I think that'd be fantastic. Like, I don't care who she's talking to. I'm going to love it.
Yeah.
So does this surprise anybody?
Anytime that comes up, there's always the fun of Deadpool being an obvious choice for any character to interact with that, you know. Sorry, go ahead, Josh.
I was sort of setting up a question. Does this choice surprise anybody that they're going this route? I don't know if I telegraphed this as much as others might have been able to.
For the Young Avengers type of team? I feel like I've heard rumors that they would do something like that just because you could tell they're setting up the second generation of heroes, like in everything they've a lot of the series I think were leaning that way. In some of the movies too, like Cassie's in the movie, Ant-Man and stuff like that. So
okay,
you had a feeling they were sort of trying that. I didn't know when it was going to pay off. So the fact that we sort of have this Nick Fury type of thing trying to recruit, like, now it's like, okay, so maybe you do actually have a plan and we will actually see this come to fruition at some point. It's probably going to happen further down the line than I would like. That's something I think I'd rather happen sooner rather than later. But I mean, I guess if they're younger kids, I guess you can still wait a couple years to finally pull that team together. But I'm all for it. I would definitely want to see that.
And I'm interested in what members of the team we don't know yet. Because obviously, like you said, Cassie will be recruited. Who else is out there that we're going to run into that's going to be thrown in with this team? Because, I mean, we could look at the actual Young Avengers, but already Kamala being a part of it kind of throws that off a little bit. So I don't know. It interests me to see who they're going to pull for the roster, because we already know that they did say they were doing Thunderbolts, and we know that's happening at some point.
Right.
And I'm assuming if they're going to do Young Avengers, maybe we get like a West Coast Avengers or a New Avengers or a Dark Avengers or something like that at some point as well. Different versions of the Avengers popping up all over the place kind of thing.
Right.
But I don't know. I think it'll be fun to see who they pull out for that. Because, like, right now, I don't have any ideas. I just think it'll be fun to see. Like,
yeah. Yeah, we sort of only really know the three. Kate, Kamala, and Cassie, I assume. There's America Chavez, too, right? From Doctor Strange. Oh, we could pull her in.
Oh,
there's
you
four.
Know what? And Hulk's kid.
There are five. We're good. We got the team.
Yeah, Hulkling gets introduced at the end of that series.
Why am I not remembering
Josh
that?
Looks...
Josh has forgotten the end of She-Hulk.
At the end of She-Hulk, you get introduced to Hulk having a kid. Sure, I don't think it's going to be Teddy Altman, but
I guess
be
I
got to
rewatch the last episode of She-Hulk. Or is it post-credits? Is it just a stinger?
No, right at the end. They have like their Fast and like... Furious type of cookout or whatever, and he just kind of shows up.
Yeah.
Huh. All right, yeah, I guess I got to... I don't know what the hell that was. All right.
So I think there's your Young Avengers team. There's your core.
It's five. Yeah.
Like, I think that works. That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
All right, go ahead. Continue. Sorry.
All right. So
get into
the
other
last
big thing.
Yeah, the last big thing we'll talk about, and it's sort of a two for one here. End of the movie, we get universes that are going to destroy each other. Monica has to sacrifice herself to stop it. When she wakes up, we see that she has survived, only into another universe. And then we hear Kelsey fucking Grammer being none other than Beast of the X-Men. So we get, again, two big things for Marvel here. They introduce us to the Incursions, which is the multiverses begin to colliding and destroying each other, and we get the official reveal of the X-Men in some sort of MCU movie. The Incursions were a big part of the 2015 Secret Wars storyline in the comics. They've already announced that Avengers Secret Wars is happening. So just speculation here, but it seems like that upcoming movie could focus on the 2015 storyline with universes destroying each other. I think that storyline kind of revolves around one universe being left, which at that point is created by God Doom. You know, some form of Doctor Doom that is doing his own kind of thing. And maybe not the Secret Wars from the 80s, which is where the Beyonder created Battle World to have heroes and villains fight. I mean, I guess there's a chance we could get a mix of both. They could still kind of weave both of those together somehow.
I mean, Doom kind of gives them an out on Kang.
Like, yeah, if they want to pivot that way. Yeah.
Doom being the big bad, you know.
If there was a reason that they needed to do that.
Not that anything happened. Yeah, not that they have to recast or worry about anything. For the big X-Men reveal, this is something we've been waiting on since they got Fox. We didn't know when or where they were going to show up. I kind of like, one, what did you think? And two, I guess, are we to assume that the universe we've popped into at the end of this movie is Fox's X-Men universe? Or is this just something that still kind of looks the same, but is still slightly different? Because, I mean, like, looking at the background, it looked like the basement from... Charles Xavier's X-Men mansion from the Fox movies. Like, the designs, the doors, the lighting, everything looked the same.
I'm going to say, one, let me just say, what a way to introduce it with the second best casting of the pre-MCU era.
Kelsey
Grammer is Beast. It's not J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson. That's the best. That is hands down the best. Kelsey Grammer is Beast. Yeah, their makeup and everything was not great for Last Stand, but man... He is that perfect option of intelligent and, like, manly sounding. His voice is both of those things at the same time somehow. Like, he has that ultra beastly voice, but still somehow sounds like a genius. It's weird, and it works. And really, you were just casting a voice for Beast. Like, there's nobody that's really going to play Beast. You know, he's a blue furry guy. Like, it's going to be CGI. Second, Beast looked amazing. Like,
what I like they the redesign.
Did,
yeah.
Yeah, they went full X-Men 94. They let it be what it should be for Beast, and he looked awesome. I think I want to give Deadpool 2 so much fucking credit for saying, fuck you guys, that's the Juggernaut. What you did was bullshit. That's what the Juggernaut is supposed to look like. And I think, you know, the X-Men among the Marvel groups are kind of the weirdest overall looking amalgamation of people. You know what I mean? The Guardians are up there, but you have the X-Men right there, and they're more well-known, of course. So taking them at face value of how they should look is really important because it's an iconic thing. So I loved seeing that. And yeah, I think maybe this could be them saying like, oh, she bounced into Fox's universe.
Yeah.
And that would be an interesting thing to see what they do with that. How many of them can they sign on to be a part of the multiversal thing? But it also worries me in that we're not going to get actual X-Men in the MCU. Like, in the proper, I don't know.
I mean, they haven't announced anything official, so we don't know when. I guess we could see some sort of a payoff to that. I mean, the only thing we have coming down the pipe, which we talked about, is Deadpool, which I assume is going to have some X-Men in there, one way or the other. Whether or not it continues and kind of picks up where this movie left off with them, I don't know, but
I feel like Deadpool's going to be its own thing. Personally. Like, it'll be connected a little more than before, but it'll be... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, that's a good point where I actually want to jump on then. Because I've heard some things, I have some thoughts. I don't know if any... Like, they all kind of lead to somewhat of dead ends or to contradict each other, but I don't fully... And maybe we're not supposed to. We don't fully yet know what it is that we saw, right? We see a person who is still Monica Rambeau encounter a woman who looks exactly like her mother did when her mother was young, who is not her mother, who is in fact, like, as far as I understand, she's not even like another universe's doppelganger of her mom. Like, it is another person who just happens to look like her mother, as far as I understand it. And then, presumably, if you have Kelsey Grammer specifically cast for maybe mocap or a voice at least, you are specifically calling to mind a prior version of Beast from that.
Right.
So,
right.
A couple of things I think. One, I absolutely, you will not convince me otherwise until the moment I see it, and it is not. You will not convince me that Deadpool 3 is not Deadpool kills the Fox universe. and it might not even just be like the Fox Marvel universe from leaks and whatnot. It may literally be Deadpool kills the Fox universe. Like, going across IPs.
Yeah.
Popping up in Family Guy and chopping heads off.
Whatever it is, exactly. So, if you do that, Beast is part of that. I don't think you can cherry pick pieces of that you want somehow to endure because it's convenient. If this is the Beast from where it is, then why are they putting Monica into a, quote, universe that is about to theoretically be annihilated?
Right.
Or whatever, right? One idea that I heard that is interesting, but again, I don't know where it takes us, is... what we actually saw was a live action representation of the X-Men cartoon universe. That's why Beast looks the way that he does and is in the lab coat with the glasses, that you never saw him wearing a lab coat as as Beast. They never, like, but he was doing things in this that were very reminiscent of that. I think it's an interesting idea, again, but I don't know where it puts you, because now you have a brand new character that looks like Monica's mother present, a character that wasn't a part of the old cartoon. If this is some kind of weird setup for the X-Men 97 cartoon, I don't know what it is yet. I don't really know where this gets us that seems to make sense. I don't know why you put her in this confluence of circumstances that yet appears to make any sense to me.
So, in the Marvels, we get the introduction of Sword, correct?
Yeah.
And
no, you get Sword in... No, I'm sorry, you get Saber? No, you... What do you get in WandaVision? Is that Sword?
No. Sword is only in space, so they wouldn't have been dealing with Wanda. Sword is like space defense, basically. Like,
okay, so who...
Space Force, but...
Right, but isn't that who Monica works for? Because Monica's in WandaVision.
Without getting too sidetracked, I don't remember.
She may have changed once she got her powers and joined Sword.
Long story short, Sword is in the Marvels.
Yes, that's what Sword is in the Marvels. And I don't know how familiar you are with it, Josh, or not, but my theory on this is that it's, like, my own personal thought is when Monica wakes up, she's not in the X-Mansion. She's not somewhere. She's in a Sword facility because Beast is the director of Sword for a long time in Marvel Comics. Beast is in charge of Sword for Marvel Comics and a long portion of it. I don't know if he still is or not. I haven't been reading the last couple of years, but he was a, you know, for a long time, he was the head of Sword. And I think that's where she is in a different universe. And I think we're seeing several universes collide here in what we're seeing with both Spider-Man, the Marvels, and Doctor Strange. Because, you know, you could also say, well, we've seen Patrick Stewart as Xavier in Doctor Strange. Is that the Fox universe? Well, it's not the Fox universe because we also don't see Ian Grafode as Mr. Fantastic. So we see, you know, John Krasinski there. So in other words, I'm saying, like, you see different things in each that leads me to believe that they're just different universes and maybe not as specific as the Fox universe versus this one or that one. Unless we're assuming she also wound up in that universe and just the Fantastic Four Fox is in a separate universe, but she's in the same universe that Patrick Stewart, like where they were in Doctor Strange. She's in that same universe there on either in the X-Mansion or at Sword or wherever she's at that Beast is. And that's the same universe they went to in the Multiverse of Madness.
See, I don't think it's that specific. I still feel like if we're where we end up is either the Fox one or just a completely other X-Men universe that we've never been to before. No correlation to Multiverse of Madness. That's my take.
Well, I was just saying that because of, like, if the actor's the same and that's our evidence, well, Patrick Stewart was there as Xavier.
Right, but Patrick Stewart, Monica's mom, all those people get killed in whatever universe we're in Multiverse of Madness. So there's no reason she would be there again if we ended up in that same universe.
Oh, that's true. Her mom actually is her mom as Captain Marvel in the Multiverse.
Right. She was Captain Marvel in that one and she got killed.
That's true. But I like where you're going with that. That actually helps me think about this in a different way. So you're saying to some degree, it also could be when it is convenient for them to do so, the same quote, but like the same actor could inhibit the character in several universes, and in others, it might be somebody different. Vis-a-vis the Mr. Fantastic comparison.
Which is, you know, how they could probably solve the problem of what we've not talked about this episode for behind-the-scenes castings, is just use the same character, different actor, and just say, oh, multiverse. Done deal. Doesn't matter.
Just, I mean, yeah, it's that easy. It's right there. Just go ahead and do it. And I mean,
The one speculation thing that I'll throw out there, because this is sort of how the Secret Wars comic ended, is the multiverses begin to collide until there's one left that Doom tries to quote-unquote save everybody, but he makes his own universe. It's the one remaining universe, and he has all these pocket little civilizations and different entities and stuff. Eventually, to save the day, I smacked my microphone, to save the day, they, you know, stop Doom, recreate the world, and I think possibly at that point maybe the multiverse, but basically everybody just, whatever's left and wants to be saved, ends up on one Earth. So, meaning, if this X-Men universe still survives, and we get to a point where the Secret Wars movie happens, when multiverses are dying, and maybe this one's left, our main Marvel universe is left, and maybe a few others, it could just be at the end of that movie, they just start picking what they want to survive. And if this X-Men universe that we have just seen becomes the one they want to survive, it is now part of the mainline MCU and rebirthed on this last remaining Earth or whatever.
As opposed to well, then what would be the point?
As opposed to like just picking the X-Men specifically out of this universe and putting them in ours, it just becomes part of the event.
I personally, if we get all of this, I really want a Killmonger meets Human Torch moment. I'd like just look each other up and be like, okay.
Well, it could be just like, you know, 2000s Human Torch and Captain America.
Cap could do the same thing to himself. Yeah. Brian, I like what you're selling. My only pin, hole I'll pinch in that is if they're going to do that, then if that's quote how you get mutants into our existing world, why, and it's not through genetic evolution, if it's not through some kind of environmental cataclysmic event in some way, then why go through the bother of explaining how Ms. Marvel is a mutant?
I mean, I'm not saying mutants do not exist in the current line MCU.
Okay.
And maybe it's just a part of evolution that hasn't become mainstream in this universe. But in the Fox universe, if I just keep referring to it that way.
Yeah.
Mutants have been alive and well and thriving, and we have so many that we have the X-Men and the mutant civil rights and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, we could eventually, if, you know, if we left our universe alone, this is just me hypothetically spitballing, we could eventually get the X-Men proper just through the way the universe changes and adapts. But okay. To streamline the process, they just decide, you know what, we got to put this group of X-Men over here because that universe is dying, and that's kind of how we just introduce those characters. Not necessarily mutants in general, but those specific X-Men characters.
I got you.
So that'll be the prediction we can come back to in 5 years from now and see if any of us hit the nail on the head or if we were close at all.
I'm sure we were all right.
I feel like we made multiversal predictions before that we said this about that I now have to go back and find.
Probably. Yeah, I couldn't tell you what episode or when.
And see what we said, because I don't remember what I said.
Like, one of the episodes that I don't remember if I ever actually went back and listened to when we were getting to, like, Endgame Infinity War, but I know we were basically just having hour-and-a-half-long prediction episodes of, like, this is where we're at, what's going to happen? And I don't remember how many rights or wrongs we got. I feel like we were mostly wrong than right, but those were some of the fun ones to do, I think, back when. So if we ever get to the point where we're getting to Secret Wars, and if they still want to call it the Kang Dynasty, we'll see where the next Avengers movies lead. And if we need to start trying to tie up our, like, actually go through and start thinking about, well, what plot threads are not tied up and where do we think they're going to go, and see, maybe just go that route.
I feel like with the whole Infinity War thing, I hit the nail on the head, though, leading into, I feel like I remember saying, like, they're all going to have to watch their friends die as they survive before they go to figure out the final solution to all of this. They're all going to have this moment of watching their friends die.
I think, I think if there was one thing we got right, but I think that was one of them I remember coming up, was that the end of part one should be what happened.
Yeah.
All right. Any final thoughts? So we'll get to ratings and close it down.
The only final thought I would have is I cannot wait to see what they do with the X-Men. I hope we get a fully fledged X-Men MCU better adaptation than we've ever gotten before.
I'm sure that's coming. They just don't have it on the slate yet. I don't know why, but
I mean, when we get there, I hope it's as good as it could be.
Yeah,
I hope that, like, they do it as they should.
If they give us some X-Men costumes that look like what I've seen leaked pictures of Hugh Jackman looking like, I will be very happy. Like, that's enough for me to get excited.
Just do Cyclops right. That's the one they always get wrong.
God damn it, yes.
They always get Cyclops wrong. Give me the hair flowing out of the top and the blue shit down the side of his face for no reason. I don't care. Make it happen.
I think it was the end of, like, Apocalypse or something that had them in costumes. I was like, yes, here we go. And then we got Dark Phoenix, yeah, and they did nothing with the costumes. And I was like, fuck you guys, you son of a bitch. Anyway, Josh, any final thoughts?
Nope. I think we hit all the bullet points.
All right. Out of 10, around the horn. Mike, what do you give it?
7.75.
Okay.
7.75. That's
more. Josh, what do you give the Marvels out of 10?
I'll give it a solid 7. I think it succeeded well, and it has its strengths, but where it has deficits, they're noticeable and deep enough, but it's still, yeah, still pretty solid.
I'm gonna be right around these guys. I think 7.5 out of 10 for me as well. I had every intention to try to get back to see this a second time because I really wanted to kind of dig into it more. I'd never got a chance to do that. I am anxious for this to come on video or Disney Plus or something so I can try to get the second viewing in, because I want to see if I kind of still feel the same way, or if the conversations that I wanted to happen that aren't there are still that noticeable for me that might dock the score a little bit. But, you know, sort of like we've been saying, I think this is a lot of fun, and I think that does a lot to help the movie. It is nowhere near, I think, what the internet and the kind of shit that gave it online. I definitely think it's worth checking out if you're curious, if you're an MCU fan, if you like these characters from some of the shows, whether WandaVision and Ms. Marvel. I definitely think it's worth following up with these characters in this movie. And, you know, if you haven't seen it and listened to the spoilers, the X-Men shit's just kind of cool. Like, I kind of just want to see it again just for that little bit and see what else I can pick up on. But, yeah, so I think moral of the story is, if you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. Give it a shot. You might surprise yourself. But I guess that's it for us. If you've enjoyed the show, please support us. Leave a 5-star rating and review. Give us a share on social media. Make sure you follow or subscribe to keep up with the show. We're on Spotify, iTunes, Google, Anchor, Amazon. If you're listening to us on Stitcher, I'm sorry to tell you this, but Stitcher is dead and you have to listen to us elsewhere. Although, I guess if that is your only place to listen to us, you will probably never hear this part or ever hear from us again. So I'm sorry for your loss. As always, find us on Facebook. Search Bry Guy into Super Friends. Go to facebook.com/BryGuySuperFriends. You can send us questions, comments, topic suggestions there. Try to email us, BryGuySuperFriends@gmail.com. Haven't checked it in over a year. Good luck. Hit us up on Twitter. I refuse to call it X. At BG Superfriends. I still haven't really checked that in a while either, but, you know, it's there. If we ever decide to record something live, we will do it on Twitch at my Twitch handle, which is Jedi Bry Guy. That's Jedi with an I, Bry with a Y. I don't know if we have anything really planned for doing one of those. I've had the urge to try to do one of our trivia ones again live, because I think I've had fun the few times we've done that with the whiteboards and the questions and answers and that kind of thing. So that's in the back of my head. Maybe at some point we'll try to do one of those. But I think that's it. On behalf of Josh, Mike, and myself, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.